Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Jason Cohen from Washington, D.C. is joining us on the podcast today. Jason has a real interesting way that he has built his rental portfolio. He started by buying a house he was going to live in. He lived there for a year, and then he bought a new house. He moved to the new house, and he turned the old house into a rental. And he just kept on doing this. Every year, he would buy a new house, move to the new house, and start renting out the old house. Now he's got six rental properties. They're all doing great. They're all in the same neighborhood. They're all really nice places. So I want to find out more about his portfolio and what he's doing. But first, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get right into it.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's noradarealestate.com/guide.
Jason, let's start at the beginning. Tell us how you got started investing in real estate.
Great. So back in 2002, I came across a book by Robert Kiyosaki. I think all your listeners and majority of the people probably have heard of him. But I just became fascinated with the idea of cash flow. I have kind of had an entrepreneurial spirit ever since, having lemonade stands and selling candy in school and getting in trouble for that kind of stuff. But I'm always been interested in that. And nothing spoke to me more other than having passive income or just, receiving a check every month. So in 2003, I just really started getting into real estate and started going to RIAs and a lot of analysis paralysis at that point. But I did buy a condo in 2003 to live in. And then a few years later, ended up renting it out. I was actually breaking even. I might have been negative a little bit, but I still was renting it out and somebody else was paying my mortgage.
That's a beautiful thing.
So from there, I did actually have my real estate license in 2004 for a short stint, but wasn't really doing too much. I wasn't doing any buying and selling. It wasn't until 2008 when me and my wife bought a foreclosure. And that was our first, my first kind of real single family property that I purchased.
And now you've managed to buy six properties and they're all in the same neighborhood. Was that your plan? Did you love that neighborhood or just know the neighborhood, or did it just kind of work out that way that that's where you were coming across deals?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the neighborhood that I moved into, Columbia Heights, it was when we purchased in 2008. Well, when I purchased in 2003, people were like, what are you doing? A lot of people wouldn't even come to the neighborhood. I grew up right outside of Washington, D.C., so I was very used to pretty much all the neighborhoods in D.C., so I was comfortable. But a lot of people kind of were, not coming to these neighborhoods yet. In 2008, very similar. My wife's parents were questioning the move. I want to say that I saw a lot of potential, but I think really why we purchased it was because the house was not in that great a condition, but it had a huge lot. And I just knew the value of having a large backyard in an inner city. So we purchased the property, fixed it up. And then, 2 years later, after fixing it up, we bought, we kind of said, let's buy a new property. It happened to be three blocks away. And so we purchased that and rented out the old one. So I guess to answer your question is, I wouldn't say if you asked me in 2008, would I own six properties in the same neighborhood? But because I knew the neighborhood, because I was very familiar with the neighborhood, I always looked every Saturday, every Sunday, I was always out at open houses. This was when I didn't have a real estate license. So that was the only time I could get into properties. I was always looking around this neighborhood. So that's kind of the way it happened.
Okay.
But it is an extremely nice thing to have from a management perspective.
And these properties, you've told me they're all A-class properties. They're really nice places. So I assume you're getting professional tenants. And is it pretty easy? Like, are your tenants pretty easy to manage?
Very easy. Yes. I mean, I've knock on wood. I've had great tenants. I get a lot of inquiries. So, meaning when I post on Craigslist, I get a ton of responses. So I have the luxury of having a big pool of potential renters. But yes, most of my tenants, or if not all of my tenants, are young professionals. They all have very, very good incomes. I'm surprised actually that they don't buy, but I think, a lot of it is they're a few years out of college. They're not quite sure where they're going to, finally settle. And they also, five of my six properties are all single family row houses. So they're 4 to 5 bedrooms and they want to live with their friends, or they want to live in a group setting where right. they can get more house for, the less than what they would pay for us, a condo or one bedroom.
Sure.
Condo. Plus they get that outdoor space.
Now with one of your properties, you're renting it out on Airbnb. How is that work? First of all, I guess, why are you doing that? And how has that been working out for you?
Yeah, that was a great story. So 2 years ago, me and my wife love to travel. We now have a 5 and a 3-year-old, so it's a lot harder to travel. But we're big travelers. 2 years ago, my sister-in-law was getting married and in Israel, and we decided to go for a 1 month. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was still selling software. I had a day job. I think it's important to let everybody know that for 15 years, I was working corporate America. I had a sales job, and also, that made acquiring these six properties much, much easier. So we were going away for a month and we said, what are we going to do with our house while we're gone? And I had been hearing 2 years ago, Airbnb wasn't as popular as it is now. I said, I've been hearing about this Airbnb, let's experiment. So I put it out, posting out, and it started to fill up. And it's a big house. It's a 6-bedroom house. And so I'm able to actually charge a very significant amount per night. And so I think we made that month that we were gone, the reservations totaled $5,000 or $6,000, something like that.
Wow.
I mean, that's significant money.
Yeah.
Especially when you're, especially when you're traveling and when your house sure. is just going to be sitting there empty. So we experimented with it. My wife was like, okay, let's try it and see how it goes. She wasn't sold on it, but after getting some, some more bookings, she was then sold. At the same time, one of our other rentals, the tenants were moving out, and we actually moved into that and made this a full-time short-term rental.
Okay. And is it a lot of work, like, to constantly have new people coming in? Or I'm sure it's probably things have to be at a higher standard. If there's a light bulb out, usually a tenant would just take care of that on their own. But for an Airbnb, they're going to expect all the lights to work. So is it more work on your part having to manage that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So up front, it was a lot of work, especially because we were rushing. When you go away for a month with two small kids, it's a lot of work to prepare. My sure. wife is a big preparer. So at the same time we were preparing to leave, we were trying to get the house in order. And it's a 6-bedroom. It's like a 4,000 square foot house. So it's a lot of things to get prepared, and you need to put away all your stuff and lock it, and make it a nice place. So it was a lot of work up front. We then had to get a cleaning service that not only will clean, but also do the laundry and the linens. So it's a lot of coordinating up front. But after, a year and a half, we really have minimized the amount of time spent on it. Now, I have to respond to all the inquiries. I meet 99% of the people because it's a service business. So mm-hmm. again, it's not passive it's not 100% passive income. And I think we have 5-star ratings on both VRBO and Airbnb. So to provide a level of service, you do need to touch, reach, you know, you need to go meet people. But I also probably am a bit of a control freak. So I probably don't need, I have an electronic lock on it. So people could technically get in by themselves, but I don't know. I just like to go meet people.
And
show them around the house and show them, you know, there's some quirks here and there, the door and things like that. It's a 116-year-old house.
Okay.
So while it's in great condition, it's nice. Yeah. But there is, I would say, a couple of hours per week.
Okay. That's not bad. Of work. Yeah, that's not bad. And your cash flow is way higher than it would be if you were just renting it out to a traditional tenant. Right.
Yeah. I would say, you know, about 50% higher. So, I mean, the cash flow that I'm getting on top of what it would as a long-term rental is almost a part-time job, if not.
Wow, you know, that's awesome.
So it's worth it for me right now because I am full-time real estate agent and real estate investor. So the extra 50 grand a year that this is bringing in is worth it right now.
Absolutely. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, let me circle back to something you mentioned that when you were first getting started, you had a full-time job, so it was easier to get financing for as you were building your portfolio. How important do you think it is? I know a lot of times people get excited. They want to get started in real estate. They want to leave their job. How important do you think it is to do things the way you did things where when you have that full-time job, you're more bankable, the banks are more willing to loan you money? How important do you think having a full-time job is getting started?
I think it's very important. I mean, I think that it's critical. You know, some people will say just jump in and dive right in and get it done. The path that me and my wife went was a safe bet, was a comfortable bet and a path. And yeah, I mean, we were able to get, well, so my story is I call it, you know, it's house hacking. I didn't coin that term, but I love that term. And I think it's very, very good for any of your listeners, anybody that's new to do it the house hacking way, meaning buy a house, move into it, get the preferable lending rates, easy to get loans. Sometimes you only have to put down 5% or get an FHA loan, 3%.
Right.
10%, 15%. So you have to bring less to the table. You get a much better interest rate and it's easier to close. You live in it for a year and then look for your next one. And then, you know, rent out the other one while you're doing it. So I look at the path that we took. It was a lot of work. We were moving once a year. So we were buying something, getting it situated, moving. I mean, it was a lot of work. There was a lot of weekends that we were moving instead of hanging out with friends or going and doing fun things. We were renting U-Hauls. We were making multiple trips with my Chevy Tahoe, putting all the stuff in there, trying to save money on getting a rental truck. So, you know, it's getting rich the slow way, but it's getting rich the safe way, I feel like. So, you know, we look back and by design in 2008, I wouldn't have said, hey, I will have six by now, but I did know, and I still know that I want, you know, my goal is to have 20 cash flowing properties. And so now that I, for the past 2 years, don't have that full-time income and I'm, you know, I'm an agent and flipper. It has made, you know, the last 2 years, I haven't purchased a buy and hold. Mm-hmm. So if I had that full-time job, I do feel like we would have had another couple rentals. So, you know, there's give and take.
Now, did the banks give you a hard time? Like, say, when you got to property 4 or 5, and they see every year you're buying a new house and renting out the old one, did the banks ever question what you were doing, or was it pretty straightforward to get the loan?
Yeah, that's a great question because I hear that from time to time. Like, certain institutions, you can only have 4 properties, or it never really was an issue. We did on the last property, we needed to come out of pocket 25%. Okay. So, as long as you're moving up, quote unquote, it hasn't been an issue. The one last property, it actually is a multi-unit. It's a duplex, 2 units. So it has the basement, a legal rental, and then the top floor. Because it was considered two units, we did have to come out of pocket 25% for the down payment.
Okay.
That was the only thing.
Okay. And is
but
that
we've the... never had a problem. We've never had a problem. And I don't know if it's just, you know, don't ask and don't tell.
Right.
Don't tell, you know, so I'm not really sure, okay. But we've been fine.
All right, let me shift over to asking you some realtor questions. So let me ask you to put on your realtor hat. Now, something that I get asked probably once a week from listeners is, should they get a real estate license? And I'm really torn on how to answer that question, because I think having your real estate license is good because you get access to the MLS, you have a lockbox key, so it's easier to get into properties. And you get the commissions when you buy a house. But I think sometimes having a good agent can really be an asset. So what do you think? Should an investor get their license, or should they just work with a good agent?
Another million-dollar question. It's very hard to answer this question. I've thought a lot about this. Thought a lot about it before getting my real estate license. I think it depends on the end goal, which again is very hard. I mean, we don't know, you know, we constantly are kind of changing our focus and what we're doing. What are we going to be buy and hold? Are we going to do fix and flip? Are we going to just get money from being a retail agent? You know, helping you if you want to buy a house, Dan, and say, hey, I want to buy a house in DC. Sure, no problem. Making an extra $15,000-$20,000 by being a real estate agent helps, because right now, you know, I might only get a paycheck every quarter, right? when I finish up fixing. It's a tough question to ask, you know, to answer, because it just really depends on your situation. I think that I started a company 2 years ago called DC Buy Sell, and there's really two pillars of the company. One is buy, fix, and resell. And the other side is creating a residential retail agency. So in that case, it was good because I see the potential to help people and sell, you know, $10 million, $20 million of residential retail each year. And that can be 100, 200, 300 grand of actual revenue for me, right? Mm-hmm. So that can be one other stream of revenue. Now, on the flip side, when I put my investor hat on and I go out and I look at properties, it takes a lot of time to write these contracts. I spent my first year kind of learning the contract, figuring out how to fill it out. So as an investor, do you want to take all that time to learn that or do you want to have, like you said, somebody on the team to write those contracts? You know, call, hey Dan, I need to write a contract on 231 Main Street. Instead of struggling to go through that. Now I'm at the point now where I can write a contract very quickly, right? So now it's no issue. But you're right. You know, I would never be the head contractor. I would never install cabinets. But being an agent has allowed me to have access. It has allowed me to build my network. But it also, on the flip side, there's a big thing where it also, some agents don't want to bring me deals because they feel a little threatened. Like, oh, if I bring him a deal, maybe he's going to try to cut me out because he is the agent. So you have to be let people know exactly what you do. And I think it just depends. Sorry, okay. I know. It wasn't
yeah, the, no, the I right mean, answer. That's good. The other thing I think a lot of people maybe don't think about is that there are costs to being an agent, that, you know, you're paying your realtor dues and you're paying your licensing fees and continuing ed, and you might have a monthly fee to your broker. So it's not always free in the sense that you buy a house and you're going to get all the commission. You may have to split some of that with your broker too. So, you know, I guess that there's a lot to think about. Like, it's not, it's not a clear cut thing. All right. And then the other question that I get all the time is, how do you find an investor friendly agent? And like, I always tell people, look for an agent that owns rentals, look for an agent that's active, because they're going to be able to help you more than an agent that isn't involved with investing at all. So like, what do you say? Like, how do you find an investor friendly agent?
My first stop would be a local RIA, a local real estate meetup, because if they're at that meetup, you know, now you'll have to start to work with them to see if they're the right agent, but they probably understand the basic concept or have heard about, you know, hey, and you know, investors are going to need to write hundreds of contracts to get one property. So I think that's where people might fall into traps when they go down to their local real estate shop, that it's, you know, the person that's really just wants to be a listing agent or help a buyer and is not really looking to write lowball offers or understands things about the investor needs, because it is a big difference.
Yeah.
So I would start at the local meetup. You know, there's some good forums out there. I guess Bigger Pockets is probably a good one, the most popular one at this point. But again, it also depends on the market, right? Like in Washington, D.C., I'm happy to go out with an investor because they, you know, the properties here, you can't really get anything for less than 500, 600, 700,000. So it's worth my time to work with an investor in DC. If I was in Baltimore, it's probably a different story. You can buy a property in Baltimore for 10,000. So, you know, the commission might be 200, 300 bucks. So it really just depends on where. And I think you need to have that conversation up front. Hey, I'm an investor. I am going, you know, I am not looking to buy a market rate property. You know, I need something that cash flows. And in DC, that's very hard to do. Unless you're buying a large multi-unit and, you know, the numbers just kind of work better because of the economies of scale.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that's really, really good advice. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about you or reach out to you, what's the best way someone could look you up?
Yeah. Great question. So, my agency website is called DCBuySell.com. So just DC for Washington, DC, BUY and SEL, DCBuySell.com. That's kind of our pretty website. I run a local DC real estate investors meetup. We meet every month in Petworth at the Petworth Library. So I'd love to see you guys at our next meetup. Or you could just send me an email at jason@DCBuySell.com.
If you missed that, I will go ahead and put Jason's contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 92. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe in whatever podcast app you're listening to the show in. We have new episodes every single Tuesday, and we'll be back with a brand new show next Tuesday. Thanks for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.